What if the same techniques that helped a prisoner of war survive 7 years of torture could help you manage a difficult Monday morning? James Stockdale, shot down over Vietnam in 1965, survived unimaginable brutality by mentally reciting passages from a long-dead Greek philosopher named Epictetus. Meanwhile, across decades and continents, a university student in 1990s Britain discovered that the cutting-edge cognitive therapy saving him from crippling panic attacks was actually recycled stoicism, 2,000-year-old wisdom repackaged in clinical language. This isn't nostalgia for togas and marble columns. Ancient philosophy emerged as practical medicine for the soul, designed for real people facing real suffering. The Stoics weren't armchair theorists. They were slaves, soldiers, and exiles who needed mental tools that actually worked. Today, as we doomscroll through anxiety and chase happiness like it's a product we can purchase, perhaps the most radical thing we can do is ask, what did they know that we've forgotten? Rhonda Cornum, a U.S. Army flight surgeon, lay in Iraqi sand with two broken arms, a shattered knee, and a bullet in her shoulder after her helicopter was shot down. She'd soon be sexually assaulted and imprisoned for 8 days. Yet she describes it with startling calm. Her secret? A realization Epictetus would recognize. They could control her body and location, even violate her physically, but her thoughts remained absolutely her own. This is Stoicism's cornerstone. Epictetus himself was a slave in first century Rome, his leg permanently damaged, possibly from torture. Yet he became one of history's most influential teachers by focusing on a radical distinction. Some things are within our control, our beliefs, reactions, interpretations, and most are not, our body, reputation, others' actions. We suffer not because bad things happen, but because we exhaust ourselves trying to control the uncontrollable while neglecting our one sovereign domain, our own minds. Social anxiety exemplifies this, obsessing over others' opinions, not in your control, while neglecting your catastrophic interpretations entirely in your control. What happens isn't the whole story. How we interpret it remains ours to shape. Michael rises at 4:30 to read Marcus Aurelius, then tackles CrossFit, followed by one meal daily. This is ascesis, the ancient practice of training body and mind together. Philosophy wasn't comfortable debate. Plato wrestled competitively. Socrates marched barefoot through snow as infantry. Cleanthes boxed. They knew mind and body form one system requiring unified training. Stoics deliberately practiced discomfort, hard beds, plain food, cold exposure, because adapting builds resilience. Like weightlifting creates micro tears that heal stronger, controlled difficulty strengthens our capacity for real hardship. Ancient philosophy's sophistication lay in tracking progress. Each evening, Seneca interrogated himself. What vice did I fight? Where did I fail? Marcus Aurelius's Meditations was his training journal. A Roman emperor managing plagues and invasions, writing, "You have power over your mind, not outside events." Modern quantified self movements rediscovered this through technology. Apps like Mood Mapper function as pocket Socrates, prompting emotional examination. The principle endures. Transformation requires awareness, practice, and repetition until wisdom becomes a reflex. Philosophy isn't learned once, it's practiced daily, building moral muscle instead of biceps. Jesse grew up in 1980s North Chicago, surrounded by gang violence and family chaos. As a sheriff's deputy, he was a powder keg, quick to rage, unable to let insults slide. Then he discovered Seneca's essay On Anger. Seneca diagnosed anger's root, inflated expectations about how reality should behave. The angry person has a king's point of view, noticing every slight while blind to their own good fortune. The Stoic solution is making clear-eyed appraisals of reality. Expecting otherwise is like being angry at rain for being wet. When Jesse faces disrespectful inmates now, he recalls Marcus Aurelius. Today, I will meet interfering, ungrateful, violent people. They act this way because they don't know good from bad. This isn't condescension, it's compassion rooted in realism. Meanwhile, Tom Hodgkinson runs the Idler Academy in London, teaching Epicureanism. Epicurus lived on bread, olives, and water. When he declared pleasure the highest good, he meant the absence of pain in the body and disturbance in the soul, basically peace. He classified desires, natural and necessary, food, shelter, natural but unnecessary, fancy food, sex, and groundless, fame, wealth. Most of us chase the third obsessively while neglecting the first. Yet this approach has limits. Javi Carroll, a philosophy professor with terminal illness, found Epicurus helpful initially, focusing on present pleasures created genuine happiness. But as her condition deteriorated, she discovered severe pain isn't easy to endure. When happiness becomes the ultimate virtue, unhappy people become moral failures. Astronaut Edgar Mitchell, returning from the moon in 1971, experienced the big picture effect, a visceral understanding that we're all part of the same stuff. Ancient philosophers cultivated this without spacecraft through the view from above, imagining rising higher until Earth becomes a speck in infinite space. Marcus Aurelius used this technique constantly, calling himself a molehill of every mounting, not nihilism, but perspective-taking that freed him from petty concerns. Heraclitus saw the universe as constant flux. You cannot step twice into the same river. Yet beneath this chaos, he perceived the Logos, a cosmic intelligence guiding everything. Our purpose isn't resisting change, but aligning with cosmic patterns. Modern physics reveals billions of galaxies, each with billions of stars. Whether or not cosmic consciousness exists, the perspective serves a purpose. It shatters ego's prison. When you grasp your place in 13.8 billion years of cosmic evolution, mortgage worries and social media anxieties shrink appropriately. You're not diminished. You're liberated to focus on what actually matters. In 2011, tents covered in slogans like "Kill the policeman in your head" sprouted outside St. Paul's Cathedral. The Occupy movement had arrived in London, chaotic, leaderless, and unknowingly channeling Diogenes the Cynic. 24 centuries earlier, Diogenes lived in a barrel in Athens's marketplace, eating scraps and urinating publicly to prove civilization's conventions were arbitrary. When Alexander the Great asked what he could do for him, Diogenes replied, "Stand out of my sunlight." This wasn't performance art. It was philosophical therapy. Albert Ellis, founder of rational emotive behavior therapy, used similar shame-attacking techniques. He approached 100 women as a teenager to overcome rejection fear, later having patients sing in public or wear ridiculous clothes to desensitize them to judgment. Dave McKenna, paralyzed by social anxiety, broke through by shadowboxing in a mall wearing a scarecrow costume. The Cynic insight reveals a radical truth. Our fears are just beliefs. You won't die from embarrassment. You don't need status to be happy. Yet cynicism contains contradictions. 2 years into Occupy London, protesters voted to give their Tranquility Center power to eject disruptive members, the commune evolving into government. Total rejection of civilization is unsustainable. The question isn't whether to have conventions, but which ones serve human flourishing versus power and profit. Marine Thomas Daly carried Stoic philosophy through combat, then faced his ultimate test, a terminal brain tumor. His response, acceptance without resignation, embodied philosophy's ancient purpose, learning to die well. Socrates claimed, to philosophize is to practice dying, treating his execution as a final lesson. Epicureans disagreed on the afterlife, but agreed death isn't evil because it eliminates sensation. Yet we can distinguish better and worse deaths. Charles Ledbetter's father died in a cluttered hospital ward, doctors controlling everything. His mother refused medication that would cloud her final days, finding peace on her terms. Our healthcare system produces too much bad death, dying as something done to you rather than something you actively shape. What we control isn't whether we die, that's guaranteed, but how we meet it, with fear or acceptance, clinging or releasing. Ancient philosophy offers something radical. You already possess the tools for transformation. Socrates practiced in the streets. Epictetus did it as a slave. Marcus Aurelius while running an empire during plagues and wars. Start small. Before sleep, ask, what vice did I fight today? Where did I fail? When anger rises, ask, what expectation is being violated? When anxiety strikes, distinguish what you control from what you cannot. The Stoics, Epicureans, and Cynics shared one conviction. Philosophy isn't preparation for life, it is life, practiced with intention rather than sleepwalking. Your move.